Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
What is up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, and one...
But not too many.
Not too
Just
many.
Just a perfect amount of books.
Ooh, okay, you're feeling good about The Stack. I like it. I like it when we go in this way. We do have one advanced book we'll get to in a bit.
Don't spoil it.
First, big one coming out, Deadpool number one from Marvel, written by Cody Ziegler, art by Roger Antonio Ziegs. The Ziegs and the Antones is what
could
I
be
like
Ziegler.
To say.
I'm not going to fall for. I'm not going to make the same mistake twice. Although I probably will, but let's. I'm going to wait on the proper pronunciation.
This is you touching the nickname. A flame on a stove. Like, ooh, that hurt, but maybe not the second time.
Oh man.
In this first issue of Deadpool, we are very loosely picking up on the continuity of the previous one. He still has a Carnage dog that's hanging out with him.
Of course he still does.
No longer dating the same person. They seem to have broken up. And he's going on mercenary stuff. He's following a portal guy in this issue and ultimately runs into a new adversary who is going to plague him throughout probably the first arc called Death's Grip.
Or maybe the rest of his life.
Maybe the last of his life. Death's Grip, that's a character Deadpool won't make any jokes about, I'm sure. Pete, you love this issue. Take it away.
Yeah, I'm a Deadpool fan, and I was super happy about this. I thought it was a solid number one, fun to see him with the symbiote giant monster dog. Really loved the art. I felt like the villain was really cool and fun. And and I mentioned this on the live show, so I hate to repeat myself, but one of the things I find that I enjoy about Deadpool is he shares. He's kind of an open book, you know, like if he's still feeling bad about his past relationship and he's talking about it, which, you know, as somebody who balls up their emotions and feelings and puts them away until they eventually grow into a rage that overtakes them, I think is a nice way to go about things.
I'm going to say something that I'm sure you're going to take exception to, but I don't mean overtly negatively. This feels a little safe to me. And what I mean by that is, like, I liked it. It's fun. Cody Ziegler does a good job of channeling Deadpool's voice. There's some good jokes in here. The art is really nice and solid as well. Clearly, this is a book set up to be on shelves with enough issues when Deadpool and Wolverine comes out in theaters. Totally get that. But I like it when these books do a bigger swing. I think the last run did a bigger swing, added a lot of mythology, a lot of characters, a new love interest, the Carnage dog, etc. is a little wilder. Going all the way back to Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn's run, same sort of thing with the dead presidents coming back.
It's not Duggan.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
Can't believe I made that mistake just now. Anyway, that's kind of what I wanted here and I didn't quite get. I'm intrigued by Death's Grip. I'll definitely keep reading this because I like a good Deadpool book. I want to.
You know, you could have just said it was nice and moved on, but then you had to sit there and go, it's safe.
Sorry, I gave criticism on our comics criticism podcast. I will literally never do that again until right now when we're talking about Shazam.
I wasn't done. You said some things, and now I get to
say more things. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, because you slapped me in the face.
Some sort of conversation, Pete? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, I'd said some nice things about Deadpool. Then you slapped that all in the face and made your statement. So I feel like I have to say something back. Fine. Yeah, maybe in the first issue they didn't come out with a crazy huge idea. Maybe they were kind of slowly working up to something. Or maybe it's nice just to have a little bit of a normal adventure before things get insane. You know what I mean? Like, this is Deadpool, so it can go anywhere. It doesn't always have to be on fire. It doesn't always have to be insane. Sometimes it's nice to have just a quiet thing where he's contemplating his past relationship and having a good time with his dog as they murder their way through some mercenaries. Like, yeah, you can have small moments in life. They're not always huge moments in life. You know what I mean?
Well, I am buying and reviewing comic books, so I kind of need the bigger moments.
Oh, man, you're a real piece of shit.
Shazam number 10 from DC Comics, written by Josie Campbell, art by Emanuela Lupacino and Mike Norton. Talk about your big swings. There's a new team taking over the title from Mark Waid and Dan Mora, I think, was doing the art, but I could be wrong about that. I apologize if I was wrong about that. Regardless, we are picking up the plot here where their house was destroyed but rebuilt by Zeus. Meanwhile, Billy Batson is wrestling with the fact that he and the Captain kind of have different personalities now, riffing off of the classic Captain Marvel status quo. And in this issue, they discover their rebuilt house was kind of rebuilt wrong by all of the Greek gods that give Shazam his name. This is great. This is everything that I wanted out of this when I heard Josie Campbell and Emanuela Lupacino were taking over the title. The art is phenomenal. The partnership between Billy and Mary Marvel is great. Her being the straight man, him being the crazy man in the situation. Wonderful dynamic that is going on here. And the creativity as well, using the stress of moving into a new house, albeit this is their old house, and using that to create a supernatural threat for the whole family, I thought was phenomenal. Man, I am jazzed about this book going forward. I am jazzed.
Yeah, I just thought it was safe, you know?
Did you actually think it's safe?
Or well, did you see what happened there? You went off. You were very passionate about something.
But did you think that? Did you think that, actually? You didn't.
No,
I knew
no,
it.
But you're still an asshole. First off, that's let's fair. Back up the truck here a little bit. This is cover of the week material. The T-Rex with the top hat and monocle and the cross section of the house where you can see into every room. That's my wheelhouse. All of that is glorious.
And he says room for one more, right? Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Oh, man. Did you
read Beyond the
Cover? Did anyone ever tell you that?
What?
That it's not funny when you do it. You know what I mean? Like, other people can be doing stuff and it's
every day when I was running a comedy theater.
Oh, wow. All right. Yay. That's tough because we co-host the show. This is a totally fun issue. Seeing Zeus and the fun back and forth and the giant purple dragon. I mean, fun twist at the end. This continues to be great. But the art is fantastic. It feels like we got a new life in this book. So, yeah, this is very enjoyable.
Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom, art by Scott Hepburn. Check out our interview on just this past week's live show with the full team. We talked to them about this book.
Too bad we couldn't talk to them about this book.
You son of a bitch. This is the official sequel series to Minor Threats. We had a sidequel with the alternates. Now we're getting back to Playtime, who has taken over Twilight City, I think is the name of it. I don't know. Anyway, she is finding that Heavy is the head who wears the crown. She is dealing with some uprising from various gangs. This is bloody. This is intense. This is my favorite new superhero universe in years. Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, I do. I love, you know, we talked a little bit on the live show of like the gritty nature of the artwork that kind of does such a great job of pulling you into this world. I also like the chaos factor that this comic has. It reminds me a little bit of Happy, which is Patton worked on the TV show that was originally a comic book. But what I liked about that is there these characters, there's this possibility of anything can happen. Nobody is safe. You're kind of on the edge of your seat a little bit with this comic. And the art does a great job of showing that, the griminess of things, the kind of real nature in this kind of post-apoc kind of world. So, yeah, I think it's not only creative, but it's also really well done in the world that you kind of get to jump into.
This feels like the Godfather to the first series Godfather, where it's like,
are you going to say the next series is like Godfather the 3, which, you know, maybe wasn't as much of a success?
I mean, we'll see. I don't know, but I haven't read that one yet. But I do think, like, the setup here clearly is like, oh God, now I'm in charge of this whole mob. What do I do? Oh my God. There's a lot of stuff going on, and it's great. This is really creative superhero universe focusing on the super villains. Very, very good. Great art from Scott Hepburn as well. Like you said, and like we said on the live show, very like gritty, grimy 70s, early 80s stuff. Great book. Definitely pick it up. The Immortal Thor number 9 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Ibram Roberson. In this issue, Thor is going directly after Dario Algar, the Minotaur, who has been secretly manipulating things in the background. In this issue, Minotaur lays out his whole plan. It's like, hey, I want to destroy the Earth and move everybody to my rocks on domes because I love making money. He's teamed up with the Enchantress. He's teamed up with the Executioner to make it happen. And Thor is being weakened by the fact that, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but the fact that they bought his comics. So there's a whole metatextual thing going on here as well. Pete, you said that you felt very called out by this one. Why was
I
that?
Felt personally attacked in this issue because you actually have, you know, Thor reading a Thor comic book, and the message is, you know, like, hey, Thor, stop wasting your time on reading the comic. You have to go save the day. And I felt very called out, was like, what are you saying? Should I stop reading comics? Are civilizations falling? Is the world turning horribly wrong? And I'm wasting my life by investing all this time and energy in comics? Is that what you're trying to say, Thor?
I do have some news for you, Pete. Oh, you are not Thor.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I did. I kind of missed that part of it. You know what I mean?
A little bit.
That part of the equation.
Can I tell you the part that I took exception
to? Wait, do I not have a magical hammer that...
No, nothing. Keep straining. Keep straining, man, until you pull a hernia. The part that I took exception to is Dario is like, we're printing a comic book that twists your adventures and story that is going to, millions of people are going to read. And I was like, okay. No, I'm reading a comic book where Thor, the Norse god of thunder, who is a superhero, is talking to a Minotaur and a lady wizard in a fantasy world.
A regular Minotaur. This is like a...
like it's, you know, a muscly blood Minotaur.
Yeah, with a skull
whatever
for a face.
Comics do not sell millions of copies in this day and age. They sell at max...
maybe this was taking place back in, you know.
Yeah, sure. Whatever it is. But it definitely took me out. I was like, millions of copies? I don't know, Al Ewing. I'm not sure about that. I understand
maybe,
the point.
Maybe someone wrote like thousands and they were like, oh, you know, I feel like we get more impact.
And
we
Thor,
say millions.
Too? I don't know. Yeah, Al Ewing's original version of the script was like, this is going to go out to maximum 8,000 people.
I think I said, think about it. If you were being realistic and there's really undercuts.
Here we go. We're going to change the world.
There's going to be five dudes who really.
Tell you what. This is really, really going to control and twist the brains of the over 45 crowd.
Yeah.
Of dudes, very specifically dudes. I'm not even saying men, but dudes. Who still go to comic book shops. They're going to be fucked up after reading this. Anyway, otherwise, this was really good.
I mean, art is unbelievable. It's great. It. I mean, the cover was just I mean, it's a little bit meta, but it's just brilliantly almost painted, you know? And as soon as you see a Roxxon dome, you should run. I mean,
this feels like a spiritual successor to Kieran Gillen's Journey into Mystery, the Loki series from back in the day, just because it's dealing with Thor stories, where that previously was dealing with Loki stories. And it's really interesting.
Yeah, like, I read it.
We've talked about various issues of this book that have gotten a little heady. This is one that is much more accessible. It's fun. The Minotaur is kind of a terrifying, awesome adversary. I love Enchantress in this issue. I love Executioner in this issue. Really good stuff. And I'm really looking forward to later on in the month, they're spinning off the Roxxon Thor, which is the uber over-the-top version of it that I can't believe they got Greg Land to draw, which is like, does he know that he's being made fun of? Kind of, I wonder.
Is Greg in on the joke?
I'm not sure. Whatever it is, I can't wait to read it. Batman 146 from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Jorge Jimenez and Michelle Banditti. This is continuing the Dark Prison storyline, where Batman has been imprisoned with the Joker.
Why?
Failsafe, who has been taken over by the Batman of Zur-En-Arr, and I am forgetting his name, but the guy who trained Batman back in the day from the series that I am forgetting the name of, that Chip Zdarsky wrote about the young Batman. Whatever it is, Batman in this issue is trying to escape from that prison and runs into some trouble. I love this Chip Zdarsky run. There is so much danger for Batman. I'm still iffy about, like, there's a fair amount of retconning that goes on in this issue with the Joker and putting him into, like, oh, he was actually behind all of these stories, to the point that, like, it contradicts what Tom King is doing over the Penguin in particular, but it's okay. It's fine.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this so much. At the same time, it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm having a blast with this. Also, holy shit, what a cover. You know, a bunch of dead villains on it. I was like, oh, man, this is very exciting. Is this a spoiler? Did I just ruin what I'm about to read? But good news, not yet. But yeah, it's such a great start with this new kind of info, you know, on Batman. Whether or not it's retconning, I'm not sure. But, man, loved it. And then just see him kind of like, because it's been this thing of like, oh, he's fucked. He starts to win a little bit, and it feels so good where I'm like, yeah, dude, work your way through that prison. Come on.
Can I call out, and this is a spoiler for anybody who hasn't read the issue, but he's in Blackgate with the Joker, and he gets out on a level where it's just not superpowered villains, and they're all like, oh, it's Batman. Let's kill Batman. And he's like, what is this? 70-something guys, I can do this.
Yeah.
The expression, the way Jorge Jimenez draws Batman being like smiling a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. Yeah. It's just great to be like jazzed about a Batman book. We're like, yeah, let's go. Let's do this. It's fun stuff.
Yeah, the pace, the action, yeah. I mean, the kind of also the, you know, if you would have told me about this like evil failsafe bullshit, I don't know if I would have, but that, you know, that the fact that like part of the Bat family doesn't know it's not Batman is such an interesting thing. And then the talk that the robot has with Superman was like really awesome. You're getting some really great stuff from these decisions. It's not just like, I'm making a wild choice here. Who gives a shit? Let's move on. Like the ramifications of some of this stuff is really what's kind of turning me a little bit.
Not to reiterate what you said, but like the idea that Batman has taken things to such a place that, and we talked about this with the last issue, but that the whole Bat family would be like, yeah, I guess Batman could transfer his consciousness into a robot to fight crime. If he died, I don't know.
That makes sense that he would make that fail safe.
It makes totally logical sense. And you feel it when you're reading the pages. It hurts that Damian is so into it. I love that Nightwing and Barbara Gordon are like, would he do that? I don't know. Probably, maybe. It's just like it perfectly hits exactly how everybody in the Batman family would feel about this. And I'll also throw out there, I'm surprised you didn't mention this, but the stuff with Alfred is so sad in the beginning as well. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Matt. Great issue. Why don't we what is that? Ooh. Ooh. Oh, I hear it. The ghost machine is booting up, Pete. Oh my goodness.
What the fuck?
Oh no, the ghost machine is in full production now. Producing.
Are you talking about the
ghost.
John's block? Are we reached the John's block?
We're calling it different things. Ghost Machine is a co-op of comic book creators, including Jeff Johns, a bunch of artists, a bunch of other writers. They teased it in Ghost Machine 1, which we talked about a couple of weeks back on the stack. They're published through Image Comics. But it is its own independent co-op. And we've got three issues coming out this week, all written by Jeff Johns in the Johns block, the jock, if you will. Right?
Yeah.
Sure. So let's talk about all of them. We'll talk about them one by one, but I'll mention them now. Geiger number one, written by Jeff Johns, art by Gary Frank. Redcoat number one, written by Jeff Johns, art by Brian Hitch. And Rook Exodus number one, written by Jeff Johns, art by Jason Fabuc. The way that Ghost Machine is working is they have a couple of different universes for people to play in. One of them is the Unknown Universe, which we've already seen through various issues of Geiger that we've talked about and reviewed before. Redcoat is an extension of that that takes place in the Unknown Universe. But Rook Exodus is its own universe. Why don't we start with Geiger? I think that makes sense, yeah, because we've read a lot of that before. In this issue, Geiger, our radioactive man, is doing an old Western thing. He is traveling across the landscape and finding a new mission. It's too bad Justin isn't here for this issue, because I feel like he's been very down on Geiger. And what I liked about this issue is it moved the story forward. It felt
you
like
think
this,
it would have turned him. He would have been a Geiger fan.
I don't know. I'm not
okay.
Interested.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, to echo what you said, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons it'd be nice if Justin was here, you know what I mean? But anyways,
I miss him.
Oh, well, that's nice. Hey, pour one out for the guy. All right, here we go. I think that what's fun is, don't you waste any of that. I think what's fun is the cover is like, this starts now. And I was like, well, I've been reading Geiger comics for a while now. I mean, we're just starting now. Oh, okay. All right. I almost want him to be like, forget everything you know about Geiger. Just start fresh. I'd be like, all right, done. Yeah,
except this issue does not exist on its own. It is very much picking up on the previous adventures of Geiger. This knight character who's following him, a knight with a K, to be clear, who really wants to team up and kind of be a squire. It's a little bit of a Don Quixote thing going on. And by the end of the issue, they're
looking.
And the
guy does look like he's wasted, you know what I mean? So
yeah, totally. And this is a post-apocalyptic tale about a radioactive dude. Gary Frank's art is fun.
Worth it alone.
Oh, my God. It's so good. I do like how this is moving forward. They're turning this into a post-apocalyptic Western, and I appreciate that. I think there's a little bit more focus here. So that's nice. And I like the tease of a new adversary that we get at the end.
Yeah, I agree. I think this does a great job as a first issue of kind of setting things up a little bit. Obviously, you know a little bit more backstory if you've been reading the other stuff, but you can still just pick this up as number one and get everything that's happening. They do a good enough job of kind of setting up the world and giving you stuff to get excited for. I love all the action, all the over-the-top kind of ridiculousness and done in such a good way. I think it's a fun post-apoc world. And,
what are you saying? Post-apocalypse? Is that?
Yeah, post-apocalyptic world. And I just say post-apoc.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you were saying apoc like BIPOC, and I was like, that's a different thing.
What's a BIPOC? Meepoc, a UPOC?
Nope.
Okay.
That is not it. Let's not get into it. Redcoat number one. This is about a dude in the Revolutionary War who accidentally becomes immortal. We got a little bit of a setup of him in various issues before, but this is firmly setting up his origin story. This is fun. I thought this was like nice and solid. I was not blown away by it, but I always love Brian Hitch's art. And this is very much leading into a bunch of action sequences with him. I think the mythology is interesting because we're mixing in historical figures like Ben Franklin and others. So this gives it a very different tone than Geiger. And if you want like a drunken rogue throughout time who is...
Who does?
Yeah. Who is trying to do the right thing, but mostly getting wasted and trying to take advantage of other people, and everybody hates him. I don't know. I'm a sucker for that kind of trope, so I enjoyed this quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Hitch's art is the real kind of hero here. It's really impressive artistically. You're kind of jumping around in time. Yeah, I mean, this isn't my cup of Boston Tea Party at all, but I do think that this is interesting tale and really well told, and it's got some really fantastic action. It's just we've heard the story so many times. You know, it's like the guy rides through town. He's like, hey, the Redcoats are coming, the Redcoats are coming. And then luckily there are all these fireflies that murder a bunch of people so he can continue his tale. You know what I mean?
Well, if you have the Constitution, you can declare your independence from other types of comics and just pledge your allegiance to this one, I guess.
Yeah, and just remember that it's the maps on the back of the Constitution.
Where is our National Treasure 3 is what I want to know. Rook Exodus, number one, just to wrap
Shake
this up.
Shake fist into the air.
I am in a cage of my own emotions. This is, as I mentioned, separate
cage of emotion
from the unknown universe. This takes place on an alien planet. There are a bunch of folks who control different types of animals. We're getting a bird guy, per the rook of the title, a pig guy who controls warthogs, and other surprise guys. Yeah, please.
Okay, first off, I love this idea. I think it's an interesting idea that, like, if you get this mask that is the shape of an animal, you then can control that animal. That's a fun idea. Like, hey, oh, I'm on this alien planet. There's a tons of birds, but I have this bird mask, and the birds can be my friend. Cool. Fun. I can get behind that. And then there's another guy who's like, yo, I like pigs. I wear a pig mask. Oh, fun, dude. We should be friends and roam the earth together and try to, like, you know, scavenge together. I think it's a interesting idea. It's got a lot of different ideas kind of wrapped up in it. But I was like, okay, all right, I'm in. I think the art's cool enough. The action is great enough. And it's this kind of like, I'm Batman, but I'm more moody, and it's a post-APOC world. So, like, don't fuck with me. So, yeah, I just think that as a
word a day calendar is out of control, by the way.
Thank you. I just think that as like a first issue, this does it, right? Amazing art, amazing action, fun idea. It's different. It's new. Okay, great.
I like this as well. I think the one thing that was holding me back, and this is a little more on me, is reading these three as a block, frankly. Because
let me see if I can guess it.
Yeah.
Okay. The technology doesn't exist that can control animals like that. So that
exactly.
Really just,
so
really,
not real.
Not real.
No, my problem was that I think it was both Geiger and Rook Exodus both started with, nobody knows how the world ends. And I was like, you're just recycling the text here. Like,
that's Jeff Johns, like, sent out a bunch of scripts and just, like, kept the first line
these are
of the
big
couple
books. These are all 60 page books. That is a lot of stuff for one person to write. And I think there's some things end up being a little samey. I like Jeff. I've spent time hanging out with Jeff. He's a good guy who I enjoy the writing of. So this is not a knock, but there's definitely like one man should not be writing three monthly titles that are 60 pages long for one publisher. That is too much for a person to handle. As for this setup, I think it gets to it at the end. I was very intrigued by the end of the issue in terms of where this could go. So successful first issue in that sense. Yeah, I don't know. It took a little while to get there, I guess, is what I would say. But I like Jason Fabuc's art. I think if this is leading with iconic classic comic book artists, as that is the idea of their line, great.
Sounds I don't know good. What the Fabuc's you're talking about. This is a fantastic world that is created.
There we go. You are not going to Exodus from here. You are going to Deuteronomy. The Avengers number 12 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Francesco Mortarino. In this issue, finally, the Avengers are entering the Fall of X. Tony Stark is like, gloves off. Let's do it. Let's take them down. Pete is taking off his earphones.
Sorry, I just got to leave this meeting real quick.
Oh, my God. So the Avengers are basically like, let's do it. This is great. This is all just like fist pump in the air. The Avengers tearing shit through the Orcus the entire time. But at the same time, I'm like, are there no problems here? Like, who? This is starting to feel, and I know the shoe is going to, that's not the expression. It's going to turn in the next month or so, but this is too easy. We're going to talk about X-Men in a second, but same thing with the Avengers where they're like, MODOK can't deal with it. The 3D man, who is their big adversary here, can't deal with it. There's a great cliffhanger at the end. There's a great tie-in to the really awesome Captain Marvel series that's happening. But too much of this issue is like, the Avengers come down and we're like, took down this base, took down this base, took down this base.
Do you think here this issue was a little too fast, too first? Because this was nonstop action fighting the whole issue from start to finish. I mean, this was tons of action here.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird feeling because reading it, I was like, I feel great. Orcus sucks. Please take them down. This is awesome. Tear through them, destroy them. But also, like, as a reader who enjoys drama, I wanted a little more drama here. And this was all wish fulfillment. So I'm curious to read the next issue, which is going to complete this arc. I'm glad they're ending into it. Tony Stark's whole thing at the beginning being like, I told you to stay out of it. Don't do that anymore. His face, the way that Francesco Mortarino draws it. Great stuff. Pete?
Agree. Great stuff.
Oh, you don't agree. Birds of Prey number 8 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Javier Pina, art by David Lopez. If you're horny for comic books, check out Birds of Prey number 8, because the Birds of Prey are headed to a swimsuit lingerie show. I legitimately do not know what's going on there. To try to track down a lead in terms of who is trying to kill Batgirl, aka Barbara Gordon. It calls us horribly wrong due to some monsters. Barda takes off all of her clothes.
For a legit reason, though. And it's hilarious. I thought this was like fun, naked joke. Sometimes when you're reading a comic, I'm like, what are we doing? But this was done in such a fun way where you're in on the joke and it works with the story in a way that doesn't feel like forced, where it's like, well, why are they naked? I think this did this in such a good way that was
the little old school Barda head over her butt. Very funny.
So funny. Loved all the action, loved the art style. It has like this really cool kind of pastels feel to it that I think works really great. Fun, crazy twist at the end. I cannot wait for this next issue. This comic continues to be a blast. Kelly Thompson is a fantastic writer. Let her do whatever the fuck she wants because she is killing it.
Yeah, I was a little worried when Leonardo Romero left the title or took a break from the title. I don't know if he's coming back. Javier Pena and David Lopez pick up the baton with no problem. This is great. It looks great. It still feels like a old, I think I said this with a previous issue, but it feels like the sort of thing like you should be getting the newsprint off on your hands when you're reading it. So good. I'm having such a blast reading this book. They're very different writers, but this feels like this spiritual successor to Gail Simone's Birds of Prey in terms of the fun, the humor, the action that's happening here. Great stuff. Don't miss it.
Speaking of having a blast,
Hack Slash, Kill Your Idols, number one from Image Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Stefano Caselli. This is actually a collection from the Image 30th anniversary anthology that came out for a while, but is the original team on Hack Slash coming back together to pit Cassie and Vlad against and with a bunch of classic Image Comics characters. So it's collecting all of those individual stories. Very fun. So much fun to spend time with them. And it's interesting to read this. It almost feels like a lead up to what Tim and Tony Fleeks are doing with Local Man right now, working in the Image Universe stuff. Great. I had a blast.
Yeah, I agree. This is just a ton of fun. It's great over-the-top action. So great to see Vlad and Cassie kind of back together again and in the mix. Oh, it makes my heart feel good.
I will say, particularly this issue, front-loaded Vlad a lot, which I really appreciated, over at Hack Slash Back to School, which is awesome. Vlad is very much taking a back seat. Vlad has been dead in the comic. So seeing him here and him and Cassie working together was very nice. Good stuff.
Yeah, it was glorious. It's great to have this kind of team back and you know, just doing some fun and you just jumps off the page. You can see the love they have for this.
Also, if you don't care about Hack Slash and like classic Image Comics characters, there's a ton of cameos in here throughout. Great stuff. Captain America number 8 from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Carlo Magno. In this issue, Captain America is backstage at a cabaret club fighting a bunch of demons in order to save it.
As you do.
Yeah. What's going on in this title? What's happening here?
Well, here's the thing. First off, great amount of action. Sure. And if you would have told me, like, hey, guess what? Captain America has an invisible shield. I'd be like, well, that sounds dumb. But the way that it's used in this story, it helps kind of share more about what's going on. Like the viewpoint and the fact that you can like see his hand gripping and like doing stuff that we, you know, you don't get to see because you can't see through a shield. And the fact that, like, he can kind of see the monster through the shield, I thought was so creative and such a nice kind of look into more perspective and get to see more of your comic, you know, because a lot gets caught out by balloons and stuff. So I was like, oh, I'm getting more art. I'm getting more story. It was I was pleasantly surprised with how quickly I went from, what, invisible shield to like, oh, this is so cool.
The art is beautiful in this issue. The creatures that were attacking Captain America are great and terrifying. I don't know what the story is or why it's a Captain America story. I don't know why Captain America is fighting fairy monster creatures in an alternate dimension behind a cabaret.
Because you're saying these things, but you don't associate it with Captain America. So it's a little hard for you.
My point is, I was really into this title at the beginning. I feel like it's gotten farther and farther astray as it's gone. And maybe it'll wrap up into something, but I'm just not sure yet.
I would say so. You know what I mean? It seems like this writer knows what they're doing.
We'll see. I bet. I bet my life.
Whoa, let's not do that.
Kneel Before Zod, number 4 Zod. from DC Comics, written by Joe Casey, art by Dan McDade. In this issue, Zod is dealing with the death of Ursa by absolutely obliterating a bunch of Kuns. I gotta say, this is the issue that feels like they wanted to get to. Like, I feel like they spent three issues building up to the death of Ursa so Zod could just let loose and get to whatever status quo he is going to get to next.
I was enjoying this new Zod with Ursa. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. when this comic started, I was really impressed that it wasn't just the Zod that, you know, Neil Before Zod, like, kind of makes you think of, that you think you're going to get. So I appreciate the fact that they made us earn it a little bit and we had to kind of go through this thing because you're really feeling, you know, Ursula's death and kind of, you know, him flying away and like all sorts of stuff. So I thought that this was a kind of well earned and well executed.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I really like Dan McDade's art in this issue in particular. I thought the action sequences were really good. The place that Zod ends up in by the end of the issue is really sad.
Yeah. Also, we've seen so many action movies and read so many action sequences. The stuff that happens in here, and spoilers, but like Zod fucks up this ship and completely screws over this crew, and they're like, what do we do? And the guy's like, nothing left to do but die. And you're like, oh, what a fucking last line. Holy shit.
This is, I think, the best issue of this so far. The One Hand, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Ram V, art by Lawrence Campbell. This is a part of dual series, The One Hand and The Six Fingers, that are following
I see what they're doing.
A serial killer and the cop who's chasing him down. The One Hand is the series following the cop who's chasing him down. We get some sad, emotional notes in this issue. Really like this quite a bit. I mean, Lawrence Campbell's art is extremely noir and very moody and very evocative throughout. There's an interesting sequence here where our main detective tracks down a sex bot that he's been with a couple of times that deals with memory that seems to indicate this may go in some Blade Runner directions, but we'll see what happens. Overall, I just really, really like these dual series quite a bit.
I mean, it's creepy as fuck, that ending, man. I mean, oh my God, that, like, from the other side of the wall. The art does such a great job of kind of like amping up this dramatic feel to things. You know, like this kind of tension, this like, you can, the wet paint on the kind of walls, you can kind of feel it. It does such a great job of pulling you in. I was really blown away by this kind of crazy story that we're thrown in here. And hopefully we're going to get to the bottom of it. But it's very enjoyable. And next issue, please.
Vengeance of the Moon Knight, number 4 for Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio. In this issue, I'm going to put a big spoiler warning here, because Hunter's Moon and Tigra, try to track down the new Moon Knight and figure out who he is. The spoiler warning is they figure out who he is by the end of the issue with a resounding, huh? What did you think, Pete?
Well, I wasn't like, huh, because I was like, oh, I know who that is.
Oh, you do. Okay.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay. But I wasn't like, oh, shit, you know what I mean? But tons of action in this issue. Art is fantastic. I love kind of like this anime, kind of like pointy action style that it has. I'm glad that we got to this reveal because it's been driving me crazy. So I was very much like, I want to know by the end of this issue. So I was very happy that we got this kind of out of the way, or kind of let this cat out of the bag to see what we're really kind of working with here. So I'm excited to see what happens after this. So to see if it's all going to be worth it. But so far, fun ride.
I really like the format here with individual characters talking to this therapist interspersed with the action. I want to know what the therapist's deal is. What's going on with her?
The more we're, kind of getting to
feels
know.
Feels like there's something, right?
Yeah. Because otherwise, what the fuck? Why are we sitting in the therapy session? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't like sitting in on other people's therapy sessions. I got enough shit to deal with on my own. I don't need other people's.
I love sitting on the fire escape outside peepers. Never mind.
You talk about Peeper's therapy office? I sit outside all the time. Just listen in.
I just found out that is not covered by my insurance.
Yeah, I try to put my problems on other people's, and if I just listen to what the therapist says, I just apply it to my life.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. Go visit Dr. Peepers. He'll take care of you. Trust the peeps. All right, Poison Ivy number 21. We got by DC Comics, G. Willow Wilson.
Art by Marcio Takara.
There we go.
Woo!
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Thank you. This is the final part of the arc that's the origin of Poison Ivy revamped through a new feminist perspective. And here we're finding out about what happened after she got her powers and interacted with Batman for the first time. This is going to sound too strong. This is the weakest issue of this arc so far, but I still really like this book quite a bit. I think just because, like, the first two issues, they had more freedom to flesh out the relationship between Ivy and Jason Woodrue and the other characters. Here, they're filling in the gaps once Poison Ivy becomes a villain, and it doesn't quite work because her continuity doesn't quite work over the course of decades at this point, but they do a yeoman's job in terms of trying to fit it all in.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and politely disagree with you a little bit here, because sometimes what's nice is when a character is going through a bunch of stuff and then is talking with another character, you're like, well, I do wonder how Batman feels about this and what he's going to say to Poison Ivy. And Batman and Poison Ivy have a chat here. And I was very much like, oh, this is going to be good. I'm excited. And so I thought it was nice to kind of slow things down and have two main characters who kind of live separate lives but sometimes overlap have a little bit of a chatty chat. So, yeah. And I also liked how they're not treating Batman in any kind of way. He comes off as kind of a dick in this. And, you know, he's like, I'm going to fly home. I'm going to just go away. So, it's sad that this is the end, because this has been such a crazy ride. And I don't know. It was cool that we got to kind of see a little bit of this.
The series is great, just to be clear. Crave number 5 from Image Comics by Maria Lovett. In this issue, the app that is central to this title, that is giving everybody what they crave, goes wild, leading to a bunch of potential deaths and other things while a group is trying to take it down. Pete, you love messed up sex stuff. What did you think?
So, you know, this is your deal. Okay. This is your,
I think this was the least issue of this book, to be honest with you.
You just said that for the last comic. You're just going around just saying the same shit.
Yes.
Wow. You sound like Jeff Johns. Oh,
ooh, ooh.
Callback. All right. Anyways. Yeah. I mean, the art on this is amazing. Don't let apps ruin your life.
Mm-hmm. I like the escalation here, but it feels like the action doesn't quite connect to what happened in the previous issue with our main characters deciding to rally and take down this app. This issue, we're kind of just getting people being like, oh, the app told me to do it at the end. So, I don't know. I want a little bit more propulsion here. potentially. But like you said, Brie Levitt's art is stunning throughout. The characters are gorgeous. Great stuff. Let's move to our advanced review, Hobtown Mystery Stories, The Case of the Missing Men. This is out May 21st from Oni Press by Chris Burton and Alexander Forbes. This has actually been released in, I believe, individual digital chapters over the course of a couple of years, but this is the first time Oni Press is printing it, and it's the first time it's going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, but in full color. This is wild. This is basically like Nancy Drew meets Hardy Boys meets Twin Peaks. And if you are a fan of any of those things, you are going to absolutely love this book.
This is a big, big book.
Oh my God.
It's a lot of pages.
I was enamored by this. This is about a bunch of teens in a small town that are investigating a mystery that just like, it's been out for years. It's okay. I think it came out in like 2017 or something.
It's out May 21st. Okay. Can't spoil it.
No, it's okay.
This is in the advanced review section that we're not allowed to spoil. Don't tell me it's okay.
It's okay. Even know what I was going to say, honestly, now that you interrupted me.
You were talking about what the main character's deal is and what was going on.
So we're following a bunch of characters that fit the Nancy Drew Hardy Boys mode, but everything becomes so weird and convoluted in such a wild way. These characters are really fleshed out. The mystery ties together in a very nice way by the end of the issue. But one thing I'll shout out, I guess this is a spoiler, but again, it's been out for years. There's a thing where one of the characters is seeing this, like,
don't spoil.
Characters about, like, a dwarf about a foot tall who's just doing finger guns, and it's one of the weirdest things I've seen in comics in a really long time. I was like, ignore everything else in this mystery. I need to know what's going on with this dwarf with finger guns because I'm dying here.
Does that dwarf live in somebody's neck? Like, that was really freaking me
fuck out. What's happening? There's semi-mystical things happening in here as well. This is great. I love this book. Pete, take it away.
Yeah, now you spoiled the shit out of it. Yeah, first off, the art is really impressive on a number of levels. Also, really impressive the way it ties in. This is a cool story that twists and turns, but rewards you for paying attention. Yeah, I mean, you have some really artistic pages with this kind of like placemat kind of thing that it was also kind of like a map of the town. I'm just a sucker for it, but yeah, just great, great stuff and worth the time and energy
for sure. I'll mention, just because I'm sure some people listened to us because of this, if you liked Riverdale, this is a great book to check out. It feels
it does.
There's some romance in here. There's weird mysteries. It's in a small town. Great, great stuff. I love this. I can't wait for the next volume. Void Rivals, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Lorenzo DeFelici. We have our two characters who are traveling over a wasteland. They are attacked in this issue. Pete, what'd you think?
Yeah, this is a great ish. I mean, holy crap. The ending got, oh man, oh man, oh man. But the fight was glorious. The art, I just can't say enough about it. I mean, not only the color, but the inks, it's just really impressive. Sets this amazing tone. I love this comic. Check out Void Rivals number 8. You should. You got to do it.
Doctor Strange, number 14 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Pasquale Ferry. In this issue, Baron Mordo is constructing a evil role-playing game that has taken over much of New York. Doctor Strange has a team that includes Black Cat, Taskmaster, Hunter's Moon, to try to take it down. And in this issue, they do. I thought this was a beautiful issue.
Yes.
I like Jed McKay. I think, I know you're going to be upset about this. I think Pasquale Ferry's art works against the straightforwardness of the premise.
Are you fucking kidding me? Dude, I kept waiting for you to keep talking because that couldn't have been the end of your sentence because what you just said is dumb. All right. First off, the art on this is super tight nanners, bruh. All right. This is worth it for the art alone on this book. So how are you going to tell me the art hurts the story because the layers of what's going on artistically out fucking do any of the other shit as far as I'm concerned, all right? How dare you, sir?
I would have liked this book better.
If I was sitting next to you, I would take off my glove and slap you twice across the face.
If a Erica Henderson, other type of artist, was drawing it, somebody who was more inclined to draw things that were like role-playing games, because there's some very funny bits in here, but I think they're lost. Pasquale Ferry's art is gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Like, gorgeous.
Okay.
But you need him for the previous arc when Strange is fighting General Strange. You need somebody else to do interesting layouts for a role-playing game. This does not feel like it.
I cannot believe what you're saying because the art is so beautiful and so well done. I got to pull this up now. You're making me so fucking mad. That's okay. Got it. Here it is. I mean, The it starts with just one almost like family circle panel and is such a fun tone setter for what's going
on.
Here's
the thing. I don't know who draws family circle, but I would love them to have done this issue.
The panels are artistically done. The way they bend into each other and heighten the fight scenes. The overlaps in the fight, the panels are almost fighting each other in a way that highlights what is happening. What you said is wrong, sir.
It's weird that I'm looking at the family circle Wikipedia page and they don't specify who created it.
All right. Well, that it seems like you're doing wrong research on what we're talking about.
It was distributed for free at the Piggly Wiggly. I know that.
Great. Piggly Wiggly, shout outs, man. Live near a Piggly Wiggly, congratulations.
Hey, congratulations, man. All right, why don't we move on to The Last Mermaid, number 2 from Image Comics by Derek Kirk Kim. Can I tell a little story here? This is not a very interesting story, but my son, who is 9, is obsessed with axolotls, like loves axolotls. And I told him The Last Mermaid, number 1, included, because we read it in advance, had a axolotl who is hanging out with a mermaid in a post-apocalypse. They're traveling the landscape. And my son was like, oh, I need that book. You need to get me that book. And we thought, because we got it early, we went to the comic book store and I was like, hey, do you have a copy of The Little Last Mermaid? And they were like, no, that doesn't come out for a week. And next week we came back and we were like, hey, do you have a copy of The Last Mermaid? And they're like, oh, actually, we had that wrong. It comes out the week after this. And we came back the next week and they're like, hey, do you have a copy of The Last Mermaid? And they're like, no, we do not. And we went to multiple other comic book stores with my son, and every single time he was getting more and more disappointed. To the point where he's like, could you please go into Manhattan and just find me a copy of The Last Mermaid? And I went to Forbidden Planet. They didn't have anybody. They were completely sold out. And this is something that, like, apparently people very much underordered this title, and it is sold out everywhere. I went to Midtown Comics, and I looked through all the shelves, and finally at the end of the shelf, on the bottom, they had copies of The Last Mermaid with a note being like, one per customer. And I was like, oh my God, my son, thank you. And he read it and he loved it. And he loved the axolotl and he was enamored. He was like, that's my favorite type of axolotl as well in this book. And I was like, great. I'm so glad I got that for you. I'm so happy. And then I sat down and I read The Last Mermaid number 2. This is a gorgeous book. It is written and drawn by Derek Kim. It is about this mermaid in a post-apocalypse who had a suit that she traveled in. Spoilers for this issue, she finds a new source of water. There might be something wrong with it. She has her axolotl friend. Most of the issue is spent just being like, oh my gosh, we're here. This is perfect. I can fix my mech suit so we can go back in the ground, but why don't we stay here? Again, spoilers, I got to the end of the issue, and the axolotl is eaten by this giant creature, and the mermaid is, like, screaming and crying and sobbing, and I was like, what am I going to do? How do I tell my son?
Oh my! What you got to do is wait till the next issue to see if that freaking thing is okay.
Yes!
Because I have a feeling, hopefully it will be.
Totally. I am so here.
Hey, welcome to comics, kid. Your favorite character is going to die in front of you, and it's not going to be the last.
My point here, though, is this book, the art is stunning throughout. This is a gorgeous book. The story is emotionally involving, whether you like axolotls or not. I love this book. And it is gutting me already.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not sure what the point of that long-winded story is, other than you're maybe not a good father. But I do think it's worth...
That was the point.
Yeah, it's worth whatever length you need to go to, because this is not only a artistically impressive book for the fantastical world that it creates. It's both beautiful and scary at the same time. But it also doesn't have a lot of words, which is just glorious. It's highlighting the art, showcasing the art, telling the story, and not these stupid letters being shoved down our throats for some reason. So we get
what
to kind
does
of write.
Big letter want? That's what.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. What's their agenda? Trying to get you to spell. Anyways,
I'm a lowercase man in a big uppercase world.
All right. But yeah, I'm having a blast with this. I don't have any attachment to that fucking lizard. So when it ate it, I was like, fucking who gives a shit? I'm having a blast with this. This is just awesome and continues to be awesome.
Well, I'll report in back next month after my son is traumatized. Yeah. The Sensational She-Hulk number 7 from Marvel, written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Andre Gentilette. Oh my God, I say this every issue, but this is the best romance book on the stands. In this issue, She-Hulk and Jack of Hearts are on an interstellar vacation. Who do they bump into? Jack of Hearts, old, estranged
ex,
like not even ex. There's a character in continuity back in the day he had a romance with, but they could never touch. And they made an agreement, like, when she finishes taking care of what she needs to take care of her business, they will be together. Her, Jack of Hearts, and She-Hulk end up at the same interstellar resort. Oh, I love it. I love everything about it. It's so good. Give me a million issues of this. This is drama of the highest order, and we're kicking it into action in the next issue. It's great. I just eat it up.
Yeah, I mean, first off, keep us posted. You know, set up like a hidden camera or something if you're going to give your kid that book, because I want to see him cry. Anyways, that took a turn.
Sure did.
Yeah, I was completely joking. All right, so this is heartbreaking on many levels. Don't put quotes on that. I'm not quoting. This is just, I mean, the will they, won't they of She-Hulk and Jack of Spades here is, or Jack of Hearts or whatever he's a Jack of.
I believe he's the Jack of Off. You like that?
No, I don't. No. Okay. I just had a flashback of like, oh, man, I can't believe I said jack off on some bullets earlier. Anyways.
I just had a flashback to, oh, God, why is this guy asking me to do a comic book show?
All right. So I think that this is a glorious book and not only worth it for the unbelievable art, but the writing, the story. This, I'm so invested. And sometimes they make choices of like, oh my God, why would you do that? Why won't these two just get together? But the ending of this comic has me so excited about what's to come and what's to happen. You're like, you're so upset. You're just like, oh my God, why is this driving a wedge between them? They're finally together on this romantic vacation. This is their time. And I was so happy with the choice because of what is, oh, I'm, I don't want to spoil, but man, I'm so
excited. Can I also throw out there, and I'm sure you'll take exception to this, but this is definitely what I felt reading this book. This book is hot. Like, it is charged in terms of the intensity and the romance and the sexuality that's going on here. You want these characters to kiss. Like, even I do not want Ganymede and Jack of Hearts to kiss in any respect. I want Jack of Hearts to be with She-Hulk. But at the same time, you're like, ooh, there's heat there. Oh, my God. Oh.
Some serious heat. You can't deny it.
It's
some
serious heat with all of these characters. It's driving me. Like, it is a hepped up, hot, fan yourself book the entire time. And I am loving it. It's like Rainbow Rowell crushes it. Andre Gidelet on the art makes everything so palpable. Also, I don't usually call it the cover, but I love the layout of the cover of this book with like the different, with Ganymede in the background, just sort of like lounging out by the pool, Jack of Hearts in the middle being like, I'm torn between these two women. It feels like how a romance cover is supposed to feel every issue, and it's phenomenal. Let's move on to another, what is supposed to be a romance book, but is way darker. Love Everlasting, number 14 from Image Comics, written by Tom King, art by Elsa Charretier. In this issue, we're continuing to follow the cowboy, the mysterious figure who has been killing our main character, June, I want to say, over the past several issues, every issue. And we are starting to break the format here. Like I said with the last issue, I love how they're starting to break this down. We get some big revelations about the mythology in this issue that I thought were awesome.
Joan,
thank you. I apologize about that. This felt like spinning his wheels is wrong, but it was like hitting the same notes purposefully for several issues, but we're finally getting to it, and it is making me so hungry for more.
Yeah, I mean, this was, yeah, I agree with you. We kind of got what's going on, and then they kind of like sat in it for a little bit, and now we're kind of getting some real movement in a way. We get to see kind of Cowboy going through some shit. But yeah, the kind of big fun twist is that Joan has a mom, and she's going to have a sit down with the cowboy. And what is that going to be?
Yeah, very interesting. This
hey,
feels
stop
very
killing
much,
my daughter. Ah!
This very much feels like the pace of a Vertigo book back in the day. If you're curious to check it out, it's heading towards an ending of some sort, but how many issues? TBD. X-Men number 33
amazing
from Marvel.
Art, though.
written by amazing art, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Duggan, Josh Duggan. I'm so sorry. Art by Joshua Cassara. As mentioned earlier in this issue, the X-Men are really taking it to Orcus and really winning here. We get a great moment where Miss Marvel calls on the X-Men of Latveria. Again, similar to the Avengers issue, I read with some like, cool, the X-Men are winning. This is going to go bad at some point, right? Because it definitely is.
Can I say something? I had a great time in this issue.
Wow!
Yeah, man, some classic kind of Wolverine moments there. He's got an amazing line, and he's like, he even says, like, that's my line, bub. And I was like, yes! Oh, man, Doom is great. I mean, sure, I was hoping Cyclops would kill Nimrod, but maybe Nimrod dies soon. So I've got hope.
Yeah, I think in terms of that plot, a lot of this issue, X-Men has kind of feel like an ancillary issue to Rise of the Powers of X and Fall of the House of X, which seems like where the main story is. This is kind of filling in the
details.
Which
almost feels like the opposite, because it feels like the X-Men title should have all the X-Men stories.
I agree. That's not what's happening. Instead, we're getting the X-Men are focusing on, like, just having some fun adventures. But the whole Nimrod thing is going to probably go down in those dual miniseries. We'll see what happens. Good art from Joshua Cassara. The Sacrificers, yes. Number 7 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Max Fumara. One of our main characters, who is the daughter of the Sun and the Moon, I want to say, is on the run. She's had all her power sucked out, and she's trying to stay alive. So this is focusing on her. The series is dark. Every issue, I miss focusing on our Pigeon character, who I think is great, but this is a great character as well. I'm really curious to see.
Let me bring something up that you haven't ever brought up, and that's, man, I wish Justin was here because he loves Remender, and, you know, he probably would have some cool things to say about this book. But the art is amazing, all caps. I mean, this is just unbelievable artistic stuff as far as the world, the characters, the movement of it, the way it flows all together. Just impressive on so many levels. And I'm not even talking about how great this story is because the art is just so amazing and pulls you in such an amazing way. But man, that Rick Remender can fucking write the shit out of a story. I cannot wait for what is to come. I'm having such a blast with artistically the representation of these kind of bigger ideas like the moon, the sun, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So really cool.
Good stuff. Last but not least, Deep Cuts, number 6 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Toby Cypress. This series has been following individual Dunham One stories about different eras in jazz. Here we are following a jazz band where there is a leader. There is somebody who is looking to break out. This was not my favorite issue of this title, but I think the art by Toby Cypress was really good and felt like it moved like a jazz composition, even though the story was maybe not the strongest in the bunch. Regardless, phenomenal series. Definitely check this out. I was very happy with this as a whole.
Yeah, I agree with some of what you're saying, and that mainly is about the artistic flow to this. I mean, just phenomenal art, the character design, the way the music flows through the panels. It's alive and a part of the story in such a great way. It's just really impressive imagery and just storytelling artistically when you see what the character is going through. I was really moved by what this is trying to do and accomplishing. It's in such a stale form, the comic books, the comic book panel, to get that kind of movement and to show people's depth in that kind of way, not only musically, but then
how deep humans can be. I just tip my hat to what this is achieving artistically.
Yeah, I mean, 6 issues of an oversized comic book about jazz that were mostly really, really good.
You got a problem with jazz, bro?
No, I'm saying that is an impressive achievement.
It's okay, good thank stuff. You.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/Facebook. Excuse me, to Twitter/, I don't know.
The Facebooks.
I don't know. Head to the Facebooks or the Blue Sky thread. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah.
Comic Book Club. Comic Book Club. They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they